Can I request that to minimize the waste of time that we printed the presentation from GMR and engage on the presentation, and then thereafter, okay, and then thereafter we'll, there's no report, yeah? Okay, it's just GMR, okay, and then, okay, we'll then engage after that, but before we start with GMR, can we request that we have a round of introduction and get any apologies that are in. We can start with you, Honourable One.
Morning, I'm Kwan from Member of the Committee.
Can you get introduction from the side as well? Can you start with you?
We're
going to have a problem with this mic, I'm not waiting.
IT.
Is IT coming? Okay.
I'm Mark Nichol, researcher to the committee. Amanda Hasmini, the author of the committee.
Can you get any stuff from the U.S. consultant?
When he put down some ethical political consulting.
Okay, then can we, DG, can we request that we immediately start to the presentation and then we'll engage thereafter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. And thank you for inviting us to present you DMR's response to the President's State of the Nation address. The presentation was compiled taking into cognizance of the fact that we will still be coming to the Committee to present the annual performance plan for the forthcoming year. And the presentation has been structured into six parts. As shown there, we identified the issue of job creation was really emphasized by the President in his speech. The issue of restoration of stability, this is basically with regards to the mining industry. We are all aware of that issue. And also the issue of payment to service providers, which in fact today the President did emphasize on this matter, that this has to be really taken seriously because it's critical in creating jobs, especially for SMEs. Health issues, human resource issues, and international relations. The NDP, the National Development Plan, and the new growth have identified the mining industry as well as the mineral value addition, that is beneficiation, as one of the critical sectors for development. They are critical in terms of industrialization of any country, especially a country like South Africa. The industry is therefore very, very, very vital in jobs. We can't run away from that. The mining industry is vital in terms of both, you know, upstream and even downstream and associated industries. If you start a small mine, you might employ 5,000 people. But, you know, all of a sudden, there will be people coming there, opening heads, raising activities, people opening, pick and pay will come there. So it's got so much influence in terms of job creation. So it's a very vital industry. To address the issue of sustainable, decent, inclusive employment in mining, the DMR realized that we need to have a strategy. And there was a strategy. strategy which was developed called the Strategy for Sustainable Growth and Meaningful Transformation of the Mining Sector. And this strategy provides the basis for long-term sustainable growth, transformation, and competitiveness of the industry. The global economic environment, we all know about that, but it is still facing challenges, and it has impacted on the mining industry because the consumers of metal, especially the rivers, if they don't have food, this will affect the South African mining industry. There's no doubt about that. Throughout, it's not only confined to South Africa, and we have seen it in the platinum industry where there was an oversupply of platinum because it's not in one way or another related to supply. So if there are challenges like that, the mining industry in South Africa will also face challenges. And to ensure that, I mean, if you are faced with this challenge, the first thing which we have got to do, we have to say, let's see how we can preserve the jobs. And if you can preserve the jobs, start to look at other issues. We came up, in fact, through the leadership of the minister, platinum testing, especially for the platinum, to look at the issue that is underway with other stakeholders. Say, how can we ensure that we preserve, the jobs in the industry? How can we ensure that we address all these challenges which we are facing, especially in the platinum industry? Okay. The issue of the Anglo-American platinum and the retrenchment which they announced there, we did engage with them on this matter, and you are all aware that they decided to defer the processes of LRA in terms of Section 189. But currently we are actually engaged with them in terms of bilateral. We will try to find solutions on this matter. The department will continue to contribute towards job creation by ensuring an enabling environment for the mining industry. It is very, very critical that we focus on that, because if you don't have an enabling environment, you can scream and talk about job creation, it will not happen. And what will we do? We'll continue. We'll look at our legislation. We need to ensure our legislation continues to be competitive. That's why we're reviewing our legislation, and I'm sure the committee will have an opportunity sometime during the course of this year of looking at our legislation and engaging on this matter, because it will be brought to you once we have completed the process of going for cabinet and our consultations which are currently taking place. We will be looking at that. But it's very important, because we believe that we need to ensure that we have a legislation which is creating an environment to create jobs. That is the heart of everything. We also will continue to improve monitoring and enforcing compliance in respect of inspections and also social and labor plans. Beneficiation is one of the elements which is critical in job creation. And South Africa is endowed with a variety of minerals. We all know that fact. The challenge here is, how can we ensure that we add value, we maximize? We are currently adding value to some extent, but we need to ensure that we maximize this value addition in respect of our mineral resources. And this is really critical in terms of addressing the triple challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. To enable beneficiation, we're also looking at the MPRD. You probably have already seen the MPRD, the proposed amendments which are in the MPRD. There was say, look, let's see if we cannot address the issue of beneficiation from the MPRD, the Section 26, which we have amended. We'll also be finalizing the implementation plan framework, which will be going soon to cabinet, to ensure that we create this an environment for beneficiation of our mineral resources. In terms of competitiveness and infrastructure, these two elements are also very important. And in the mining industry, it is competitiveness is critical in terms of developing new projects and creating jobs. Some of the critical elements that are needed in increasing competitiveness with infrastructure, R&D, innovation, very important, and actually energy, the issue of availability of energy. As stated earlier, the sector strategy for sustainable growth and meaningful transformation have been developed, which identify binding constraints to growth and transformation of the mining industry. The mining infrastructure requirements are being factored into the National Infrastructure Program to ensure existing constraints are mitigated and future development of mining in new growth nodes such as waterbed, coal fields are enabled. To address these two issues, we decided to appoint the Council for Geoscience to lead the process of infrastructure, so the task team. So there is a task team which is looking at infrastructure. Why the Council for Geoscience? Because they know where mineral resources are. And if there must be linkage between mineral resources of mineral resources and infrastructure. So they have got the map which shows where the mineral resources or the potential mineral resources are. So our future strategies when we develop or we plan for infrastructure and want to factor issues of mining, we can't ignore the potential of mineral resources in the country. So it's very important that Council for Geoscience plays a role. Coming to issues of R&D, innovation. You know, we always say we are amongst the leaders when it comes to mining. In fact, we are the leader in the Kenya area. But I was the leader. I mean, if you look at it, we have got the deepest mines in the world. Who else is mining at 4 kilometers below surface? No any other person is mining at 4 kilometers below surface except South Africa. So basically, we are there in the forefront. So we have to ensure that we develop technology around this competitiveness or this advantage which we have. We have to ensure we focus on that. And in this regard, we said that let's get a scientific institution to assist us in leading this process. That's why Linter was identified as an institution which reported them to the minister, which will then drive these issues of innovation and R&D in the mining industry. There will be many other institutions like CSR, but they will be the anchor and drive this process. Council for Geoscience will also participate in that process. They will bring in the Chamber of Mines, okay, to be part of this process. And we believe that if we have got to take the country, you know, into the future and ensure that we continue to be among the leaders, this is one area where we must focus. And it's not to skills development, okay? Because the main to focus on R&D, you need people who are skilled, so it will link to skills development. So it is an exciting environment, and I'm sure MinTech will do a good job. Now the issues of stability on the mining, on our mines, it's one of the issues which was raised by the president, and there are two parts to this. One part is around looking at the housing and living conditions of mine workers. We believe that, you know, if we address this social issue, it will actually assist in one way or another. And there's a task team which is already working on this matter. The task team comprises of other government departments. It also includes the Chamber of Mines, includes the unions. They are looking at this matter. And they are currently putting together an action plan. In fact, this morning there is a meeting which has been called by the president to discuss. So there is an action plan which we are working on. We will share that with you once that has been put in place. But that is currently underway. And the Department of Human Assessment will actually be looking at issues around settlement around the mine. It's very important. It's one area where they have got the resources. As a department, we don't have the resources to be involved in that. But we will work with and close, especially when it comes to the issue of the social blend, because in one way or another, the social blend can contribute to that. And the issue is the real heart, the stability on the mind. The minister led a process whereby, you know, she calls role players in the industry, all women were there, you can see there, and called all stakeholders. Okay, through the Chamber of Mines, through Samda, and sat down with them. It was quite a lengthy process, and a framework on peace and stability was agreed upon. Okay, there was an agreement which was signed. I think we all know about it in the paper. Currently, what's happening, we are looking at the modalities of implementing this framework. Particularly with action plans are being put together to ensure that it can be properly implemented. Now, the issue of payment disability is a very important thing, as I said earlier on, for SMEs development. If we don't do it, there will always be a challenge. Currently, the department is at 92% in terms of payment disability providers. We will improve the push to 100%. We'll make hard on that one by ensuring that we improve internal control existing in the department. On health and safety issues, it's a very important issue in the mining industry. In November 2011, a summit was held on the issue, and an action plan was agreed upon. And that is, I think, is a roadmap on how to address health and safety issues in the mining industry. We will continue to monitor this matter and work very closely with Mine Health and Safety Council, which also brought to the minister. So on human resource issues, the gender issues, they are a challenge in South Africa, and we have to address them. And so Mine Health and Safety Council research is currently being undertaken on health and safety issues for women. A draft report on protective clothing for women is currently being finalized. There are consultations which are currently taking place within stakeholders on this issue. Because, as you know, traditionally the mining industry has been an industry whereby men were the ones who were going underground, you know, and the women were not going underground. So we are in this transformation environment, okay, where you find that the Italian didn't protect the schools for women. Just, you know, we have to address those things. And there is a process of addressing this matter. On human resource issues and skills development, DMR is collaborating with the Department of Higher Education and Training through MQA in respect of the following programs: encourage workers to participate in acrobat training, increase the supply of learners with math and science, and ensure career guidance interventions take place for participating learners, to provide bursaries, supporting FET quality system to be responsive to the sector skill needs and priorities, and support learners on artisan programs. The Chief Inspector of Mines is here with me, David, playing a major role in this through MQA. So the department will be embarking on a learners inspector program through the uptake of about 100 graduates for experiential training. We have realized that in the department, we have got challenges in terms of attracting inspectors to come and work for the department. The challenge is basically the issue of money. The department can't compete with the price, but people, once they have got their mine certificate, mine major certificate, you know, they are paid huge. 3 times what the department can pay, more or less that. So we have got the challenge of attaining them in the department. Now we then saw the minister's leadership. We decided that let's have 100 of these people. Let's flood the system with as many people as possible. Okay, we are currently engaging mining companies to partner with them in this regard, because we find that there are some people who get their degree, engineers, mining engineering degree, mechanical engineering, even diploma, but they can't find a job. So we want to recruit those people we have discussed the last week I was discussing the matter with HP Billiton. Goldfield is already on board in terms of one of our programs. So we want to partner with the mine so that we place these young people on the mine and train them. It's a long program. It will take us 9 or 6 years to actually ensure that we have got good quality people who can be inspected. Because you can't expect somebody who has never worked on the mine to go and inspect people. So there's no way that we can train them in the department. We have to get them from the industry. So the first thing is to ensure that there is a partnership. And you sit there on the mines, HEA will assist in terms of training. We'll also use some of our funds in the department, see how we can compensate them and train them, you know, so that they can come and be inspector in the department. And in conjunction with the mining companies, the department will also be registering 52 learners in April 2013 for learnership program. Okay? The GMR has its own internal program to enhance skills of the staff. Okay. International relations, we have got we engage with other countries, largely on international issues. And I think when we come here to present on the annual government plan, we'll discuss this issue also in more detail. But we thought we should just touch on the issue of BRICS. You know that next week there will be a BRICS summit. The department has been participating in this process. We will be part of BRICS delegates. The minister will be there. And the process is currently being coordinated by TIC. Okay. I thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Doc. I'm going to use a different approach today because I think there's quite a few important facts that we'd all like to go through. We go through the presentation slide by slide, and whoever has a question, you just raise your hand and then give an indication of the question that will be asked. Perhaps it will also be a bit easier for DMR to divide up their questions then in response. Is that okay? Can we start from slide 4 or page 4? This is on job creation. Anyone has a question there? Honorable Lorima, Honorable Schmidt. Honorable Lorima, you can ask, yeah.
Your strategy on growth and transformation, I'm interested in finding out more about the transformation angle. What does the strategy say about, or does it say anything about, any kind of move in the type of transformation that we're talking about? In other words, is there any change from a focus simply on transformation to EDIs, from that approach to any approach that seeks transformation through equity ownership by workers and all communities?
That's slide 4.
That's slide 4.
Yeah.
Also on the same slide, the patent task team. Could you give us some indication of what that task team has achieved? I think that's slide 4.
Okay. Another question?
Thank you. The EDP and the NGB, the first part. How do we interact? Because I know the injury was accepted a few years ago. Now, they seem to be used in the same sentence here. I just want to know how they interact. How do you see them interacting? Then, secondly, I missed an important issue in your second line of the first paragraph. You know, value addition beneficiation is good, second line there. It's only good when there's a business case. It's no good if there's a business case, because if you're going to tinker with the economic, mineral economics of a mine, you're going to force that mine to do beneficiation. You understand that NDRDA amendments come through, because the minister is going to determine the amount and the percentage and the cost, the price of those mineral commodities to be sold in the market, local market. That's where we're heading. That is so. That mine closes in 3 years. That beneficiation is going to close, because it is forced upon the economics, the local economics surrounding that mine. You're going to have a shutdown of mine, you're going to have a shutdown of your beneficiation activities. I'd like your answer to that. Thank you.
Any more questions on slide 4? My only addition to that slide is that I see the issue of the platinum task team, but obviously that came about when the strike started. All along to the present and going forward, how have you been coordinating with the industry itself to ensure that issues of job creation are being properly addressed? Because I get the feeling that with the strike that have erupted, there was a disconnect. The industry is doing its own thing, DMR is doing its own thing, and we're not talking to each other. I'm asking this more so because later on I'm going on to understand where does NICDA then come in trying to help resolve such issues. Honourable Kondo, you had a question on slide 4?
Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Kondo, I noted you.
That's a new song from Mpumalanga.
I've noted you, Honourable Kondo.
On point number 2 on job creation, DG, you are suggesting that DMR championed the development of a strategy for meaningful transformation of the mining of the mining sector. My the question that I'm tossing around my mind is in the scarcity of the requisite skills, how do you think DMR would be championing meaningful transformation? That is one. The preservation of jobs, if we go to 3, the preservation of jobs, I'm just interested in the current upheavals that the sector is facing. How managing is DMR in terms of pushing its programs in that sector? Thank you.
Honorable Kulu.
Thank you very much. I'll concentrate on that page 4, on the last bullet, on the DMR initiating a platinum testing. Actually, I just wanted to check because I realize that also in the gold sector as well, there are problems, there are job losses there. I'm not contemplating also forming, initiating a task team on that one as well, not only on the platinum sector there.
Gigi, do you prefer us to go through the slide or do you want to answer the page, the slide? Let's handle this because I think it's quite an important sector and you need the details for each and every slide is the way I feel. Okay, you can respond to us.
On the issue of the platinum testing, honorable members, it actually started prior to issues of the strike. It was when I realized that there were challenges in the industry, and then this team was actually put in place. Yet when things started to be more difficult, they were challenges in terms of ensuring that we knew people with certain issues, but it was started before then. We have already identified interventions which should take place in terms of addressing this, because it's all about looking at the fundamentals of the platinum industry and say where are we in terms of the fundamentals, which is supply and demand. If you have got more supply than demand, we are going to look at the issues of how do we address this matter. One of the interventions which we look at is to try to increase the demand for platinum. How do you do that? Okay. One, you promote the platinum mining industry. It's one of the issues which must take place. You continue to promote it. Look at other matters. If you look at what happened to the platinum industry, especially in the jewelry sector, okay, that market was literally one or another developed by Anglo Platinum. They went to the Chinese market and promoted platinum, and that is why platinum is now in the jewelry sector. The consumption has increased. We have been using platinum in the auto-catalyst environment, but now the Italians is with improved technology are consuming less and less and less. So we need to look at other areas where platinum can be consumed. Then touches also on the issues of R&D. We need to look at R&D. We need to diversify the usage of platinum. Institutions such as MIT have got to come into the party and look at this better. Just as they've got to come to the party. So that tasking of on R&D and innovation, it will be very, 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 very critical. The strategy itself, I'll get my DDG to talk to you because they're very close to it. The person was working hard on it. Let's not only look at transformation issues in terms of, you know, black and white, not at all. It looks at the entire industry and say, what can we do to transform the industry? What can we do to address the industry? That's why they went on to identify binding constraints. Okay, infrastructure. That's one of the binding constraints. They are transforming the industry, okay? And say, look, what can we do to ensure we address all these binding constraints related to infrastructure? That was put in place. The issues of beneficiation, they were looked into. That is why we've got a number of projects, which, by the way, they were put in place months, I think, by 2010, before the challenges which we're facing in the mining industry. Okay. So it is a holistic strategy which is looking at the sector and saying, what can we do? In fact, they even came to a point where they identified that between 10 and 14,000 jobs, we can take that of their target of creating jobs in the mining industry. That is how detailed that strategy was. Yes, in the previous year there were challenges, and we have to look at it again and say, how can we eventually address those challenges? I'll ask the DDG to talk more to the strategy.
Thank you very much, DDG. I think just to take the honourable members to the development of the strategy, when it goes back to 2010, when stakeholders committed to a declaration for sustainable growth, and stakeholders recognised already at that time that previously the transformation and competitiveness of the sector were looked at as mutually exclusive. And that the one sector focused only on transformation and the business only focused on competitiveness. And that in the South Africa context, you cannot transform a dying industry, nor can you grow the industry without transformation. And that the two, in fact, are mutually inclusive. And the symbiotic relationship of this sector in terms of competitiveness, growth, and transformation cannot be dealt with separately. And if you look at the amended mining chart of the same year, it particularly emphasizes, clarifies the issue of ownership, that ownership will not be considered complete in respect of transformation unless it has three pillars: the entrepreneur, the worker, and communities. And so that that shift has already been set as far back as 2010. That there's got to be that broad-basedness in respect of the ownership itself. And let me just give you reassurance, Honorable Schmidt, that as DG said, we will come back with the details on the beneficiation. But let's put it on record that mining companies are not expected to beneficiate. It is not their core business. If you mine platinum, you are not in the business of making cars. Let people who make cars make cars. Mm-hmm. And ours as a country is to create an enabling environment that there is sufficient coordination. And as you correctly say, unless there is a proper value proposition, this beneficiation cannot take off. And so ours is to create an environment that there is a seamless coordination. And in the process, we say that everybody has got their role to contribute. we actually craft beneficiation as a game-changing opportunity for South Africa. And when we say South Africa, we say that it has to benefit the miners, it has to benefit the South African, it has to benefit those who come and beneficiate in South Africa. So, but without getting into details at this stage, we would come back and give you more details. I know that there is a lot of commentators who read this section 26 without detail and uncharacteristically hastened to pronounce on the unfettered discretion as it is currently constructed. But as DG said, we would come back with the MBRDA itself, but we would also come back with the details on beneficiation and how we have conceptualized it. And in fact, in our engagement with the Chamber of Mines in particular, and more details that have emerged, we are receiving a lot of support from them with the way that we are conceptualizing beneficiation. And so we look forward to bringing those details for yourself. I think DG have covered the strategy.
Okay, the National Development Plan and NDP. The National Development Plan is a vision of the country. It's an indicative vision of how we see it as a department. And we have to align ourselves with that vision. And we are working hard on that. And we more or less think that, you know, we most of our activities are aligned to that. And we need to ensure that we do it. Even the minister has actually instructed us to look at this 2030 vision. Say, look, where will we be in 2030 in terms of the NDP? That's the vision. To come to the NDP, it's basically a program which guides us to achieve that NDP. That's how they are aligned. And our current programs are actually informed by the NDP. Especially in terms of growth of the mine industry, it's all aligned together. That's how we have this interest when it comes to NDP and NGP. The issue of, I think it's Honorable Tomito talked about the issue of recruiting, is a challenge in the mining industry. And I think what is critical here is, you know, I was debating the chief inspector of mines on this matter. Where is the problem comes in the mining industry when it comes to skills? Because we've got many, many young graduates who can find jobs. See? But there is a shortage of, you know, experienced, skilled people. Australia is taking them from us, Canada is taking them from us. So there is this gap which we have to address. Okay. And then that is why we came with that issue of 100. We said, in the department itself, let's do something. Let's ensure that we bring in all the people who have graduated. Bring them in, ensure that they are trained. That is the heart of everything. We need to ensure that we train them. And as soon as they get trained, companies will take them. It's unbelievable. They need them. So the heart of our problem in terms of addressing this is to ensure that people who graduate are given an opportunity to enter the market. That is the problem which when we analyze the situation, look at journalists now. You go to the university, almost all the universities, all the universities are full. Full with children studying geology. Okay? But when they graduate, they can't find a job. But I tell you, you take somebody who's a geologist that's got 10 years experience, this person is not in the street. They are in demand, you know. Companies need them. So we need to ensure that there is a linkage between the tertiary institution and that first step into employment. I think that if we can get that right, we'll solve the problem. In fact, if we get that right, we're not going, these people, if they don't find jobs in South Africa, they'll find jobs in other countries. Australia has got the shortage of geologists there. I was speaking to someone from the Geological Society. I was saying there is a shortage of geologists in Australia, but they need trained people. So we need to look at that issue. And maybe I'll give the chief inspector of mines to talk about, you know, the MQA programs in the regard. You know this better than anyone else.
Thank you, DJ, and Yes, I think there's a problem as well at the NQA to look at how to impact that experience, because the fact has that there are engineers, but we just need to make sure that the experience, and we are working with the employers in this regard. And obviously the NQA will have assist in providing the stipend and the grant to the employers to make sure that there is a huge intake of that. And FDG has clearly indicated we are looking at doing the same through our inspectors. We've already started with that. The IA was 24. Then inspectors will place them in the region to impact them with that particular knowledge and really to assist them to acquire the necessary GCC or government certificate of competence to be full inspector. But we're currently working together with other stakeholders to the HUA, specifically on this particular issue.
Sorry to interrupt, but after that, you find a tendency that from the mining industry side, they would rather prefer, it becomes a preference, to actually take people from other countries to come and practice here. How best then are you ensuring that they are actually encouraged to take our own learners, even if they take them at first step in 10, and 10 as in 10 to a certain extent? But I think maybe it's a piece of legislation that would need to be put into place to ensure that does happen that way. And in a way, you'll also be meeting the requirements of higher education issues in relation to getting a qualified employed youngster from within the country first.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think that's one of the things that we've also identified, and hence through the NQA itself, we strive to ensure that there's appropriate grants provided to mine, both the employers, to entice them to take more graduates as well as the graduates from the institute. I think the graduates was one of the things that they've been saying, that they do graduate, but the challenge is they don't have an opportunity for experiential learning. And that's one of the things that we are really looking at, to say how do we make sure that through the NQA, working together with the other stakeholders, we do impart that knowledge for them to be employable.
Okay, we go on. Anything from slide 5?
There's also the issue of the gold problem.
Sorry, Honorable Hulu. Before you get across, okay.
The gold mining industry, we have looked at it and said, what is the problem in the gold mining industry? The employment there has been declining over many years. We, in terms of production, at some point we're at 70% of the world production. We are now, I think it's around 7% or so. We have dropped, okay? But what is interesting there is we still have the largest resource in the world, okay? The problem is that resource is deep. Gold is still there in South Africa. The problem is the depth. And how do you address something like this? I think it needs a different approach from the platinum. At some point, the platinum industry will be at the level which the gold industry is. There's no doubt around that, okay? But to address it, you need to look at technology. That is why that task team of innovation will have to come in and play a role. We need to look at how we are going to mine beyond 4 kilometers. And you need technology there. Yes, we still have to create jobs. We have to find a way of keeping the balance there. But to access the results, you need to ensure that you focus on technology. So that is the area where we are going to focus on when it comes to the gold mining industry. That is the heart of the problem, because once you have to look at the other issues, I think we'll divert from the heart of the issue. Issue is we are deep, it's becoming very costly to mine at those depths. And now we can't compete with other jurisdictions whereby gold resources are shallow, countries like Tanzania. We can't compete with them. Because it's easy, just go there, you just open up in less than 2 years, you start to sell your gold. But here in South Africa, somebody's got to invest money to access gold at 4 kilometers, people spend time. So the challenges are quite different there, and we will address it differently.
Okay. Okay, then can we, anybody for slide 5? Also still on job creation? My only question about slide 5 is, where are we exactly with the legislation? Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Lorimer, Honorable Tinto, Honorable Conto?
I think job creation is very important.
Mm.
But the question is, do you start a mine to create jobs? Or do you start a mine to assist the government in its revenue and thereby creating jobs?
Mm-hmm.
You can't create jobs by starting a non-profitable mine. That's the bottom line. So your question, my view, is not how do we create jobs. The question should be how do we create economic activity and investment. You've got to tell him to the sick, or tell him, my view, job creation follows when economic activity. Economic activity doesn't follow in job creation. So my view, from a very high level in terms of policy formulation, my view, the stick in is, the government's got a stick in of this exercise. That's one issue. The other issue is, are you in a position to indicate any progress on the deferment of the Section 189 of the platinum, what was it, Anglo-Platt? Thank you.
Honorable Wang, your hand is also up.
Thank you. Just to add on to what Honorable Smith said, I also agree that job creation deals with basically, as long as the mines are making money, then afterwards job creation can come. Otherwise, so that is the main issue that needs to be tasked. With that, we can see the decline in our markets in Europe. We have to create, I see it relating back to the research and development for MINDEC, which is imperative to find new ways of using platinum in different sectors. So, and now we can see a decline in the auto catalyst, but as you mentioned earlier, that platinum in the Chinese jewellery market has increased dramatically. These need to be innovative things that we need to take a look at, and I think a lot of stress needs to be put on MINDEC to actually get the R&D out there, and also the companies. Another one is R&D, the other one is marketing. The marketing of South African resources, all of them specifically platinum. A lot of marketing is just how you sell it. That's one of the things. For South Africa, we're very famous for wines as well. So obviously we've got different grades of wines. We've got excellent wines and lower quality wines. But when people are overseas, they hear South African wine, they know that, okay, well, red wine, South Africa has got very good red wines. So they would, without a lot of knowledge, I'll choose South Africa. Something to this effect, similar to a short marketing story, I will be for toothpaste. How they actually grew the toothpaste market when toothpaste was actually coming in. Toothpaste, what dentists say is that you don't actually need toothpaste when you brush your teeth. It's not a necessity. But what the marketing, the marketing companies, what they did is, they kept on advertising that you must use toothpaste. It's a necessity for fresh breath to fight plaque, all fluoride and on and so forth. But if you actually go and speak to dentists now, you don't actually need that. The brushing of the teeth will actually do fine. But it's created such a large market. Now look at the toothpaste market. It's become a necessity. A necessity. Similar to chewing gum. Similar to a lot of things. So it's innovative marketing as well. To say, okay, South Africa's platinum is the best in the whole world. We have got the highest grade quality, and it's if you want it in your auto catalyst, if you use our platinum compared to another country's platinum, this one will show the best quality, for example. These are the issues that I think, because we're in dire straits now, there is large factors. South Africa is based on our mineral resources. The most important commodity in South Africa, and that's what we've got to offer the most of. So we need to push that our mineral resources are the best, through marketing and research and development. Through that, then it helps with the job creation. Then it can go through and run down. Right. Thank you.
Is that a responder?
Thank you very much. On the deferment, I don't know whether I'm asking the same question that Member Smith has asked, because I wanted to check whether you secured that deferment by using legislative means, or what does it say to existing legislation. I think, as DMR, I feel for you because you are dealing with a legacy. The industry has got a legacy of just profiteering without looking at a possibility of creating jobs using cheap labor systems and all that. Now we are asking you to turn that around. I mean, you are dealing with a legacy that stretches from 1816 up to now. And those turnaround strategies are not just going to come into place over 5 years, because the industry is a long-term industry. But we need to look at your strategy, at the strategies that you are employing. For an example, I am sure committee members parliament also affected. We proud ourselves for being endowed with a lot of mineral resources, but we are not pinpointing the strategic mineral resources that make us the country we are, or the strategic mineral resources that would appeal to the global market. I'm sure it comes to the point that Honorable Wang is saying, how are we marketing ourselves to the global market so that we can achieve the objectives of economic activity, I'm taking from Schmidt, that is of making the country economically viable or creating economic stability in the country. How do we market ourselves so that we understand that out of this market we are able therefore to create the jobs that we want to create? Thank you very much.
Member Tinker.
Thank you, Ted. Still on the deferment. I just want to, job creation is also as critical as sustaining the decent jobs. Mining companies are announcing every day about creating jobs, but this bilateral, I know that they're still busy engaging the other companies. But when is it coming to us? Because as members of parliament, we are also, as members of this committee in particular, we need to be part of this so that when this is implemented, we are also part of the implementation. Because the problem is the implementation of all these bilateral.
Is that you said it was like 4? Yes? Well, they'll answer them. But where are they? And we'll hear from them if we can get them. But I think more than anything, what's coming out now is GMR honestly and realistically addressing the issue of job creation, because it might not be the problem. There could be an underlying problem to be resolved first, and then it will lead to relevant job creation. That's the issue. But also out of the discussion that we've just had now, or the questions that we've had now, it's bringing out the issue of strategic minerals and legislation. I don't know what DMRT called it. And I think I already asked the question in terms of the MPRDA in particular, where are we in processes of review? Okay, Adisha.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me address the one of legislation and Honorable Members. In terms of the MPRDA, we did go to cabinet in December, and we then gazetted the bill. We requested the comments from the public and the interested parties. We did receive comments from the stakeholders and interested parties. We are looking at those comments, and currently what is happening, we are engaging the stakeholders. We are consulting with them, talking about the comments which they provided. We will then be going back to cabinet, because after consulting, you know, people look at things in different ways. So we might change the contract of the act or whatever. We have to consult people. We have to inform cabinet about this consultation. We have to inform cabinet about the comments people put forward. And after that, it will then come to the parliament. We are really working hard. We hope, I can't come with a date now, but I'm sure before June, July, it should be. Looking at it, it's possible, but you never know with this thing. It's possible we should go to cabinet April, May, around it. But you know, we want to make sure that we come with an act which is strong, an act which will create an enabling environment for the mining industry. We don't want to destroy the mining industry, but it can be responsible. We have to listen to people. I mean, the DDG is leading those engagements with stakeholders. We are talking to lawyers, we are talking to people through MIGDES, we are talking with the labor union, we are talking with the environment people from MIGCODEM. The other day there were people who are interested in environmental issues, who are engaging with them on this issue, because they have looked at the bill, they come with their issues. So IDC and talking to many institutions about this whole issue. It is so important that we actually understand how they view the act, so that we could improve and we present an improved document to cabinet and to ourselves also. The section 189, I think, was raised by a number of honorable members. Where are we? Okay, firstly, how do we achieve this deferment? It was not through an act. The minister through his leadership engaged with the Anglo Platinum, engaged with them, studied them through many meetings, and then from there it was then agreed that they will basically defer this section 89 and allow a process of discussion so that we can discuss these issues and look at alternatives. Currently, I'm afraid, you know, the discussions are still very, you know, very sensitive. Now we're looking at various options. Even on Monday, I had a meeting with the CEO discussing this issue. The DDG is engaging with staff of Enblad on details, you know, looking at the information and see if we can find alternatives to this matter. That is where we are now. The 60 days will be expiring very soon, and then from then we will see what we can do. But we hope to find a solution and to find one another before the 60 days expire. I hope so. It's not easy, because the companies, they came to you here, they presented their viewpoint, and we are looking at issues from a different point of view. We're trying to find one another on this matter. The issue of economic activity and job creation. So I agree with, I mean, with you there, Honorable. You can't create jobs if there are no economic activity. So our objective as a department is to ensure that we create this economic activity, which is a mine. Our job is to create mines. It's one of our key functions, to create mines
and so that the mind are functioning properly. If we can't create minds, if our minds can't function, we can't create jobs. I talked about other activities which are associated with mining. It's unbelievable. I mean, you take Johannesburg itself, look at Johannesburg, the big city of South Africa. It was created by mining. I'm sure if we did not discover gold, we wouldn't have Johannesburg. We could see maybe we'd be living in KwaZulu-Natal along the coast, isn't it?
I thought it was very international money.
And which labor? Carry on, DG, you are protected. Members are becoming emotional here.
I thank you, Chairperson, for the protection. Okay. The other one of R&D and marketing. You know, this issue of marketing, we have talked about, and you know, in our opinion, we have to go that platinum plays a major role in the economy of this country. If the platinum industry collapses, we will be in trouble as a country. We have to find alternative ways of getting revenue. This foreign exchange savings which we get for platinum. So we have to invest a lot in the platinum mining industry. And marketing of platinum should be part of the game. You know, you should be, when you go to the airport or Tambo, you should be seeing billboards talking about platinum, how important platinum is. So buy an ounce of platinum before you fly out, you know, all those things. So we need to find ways of ensuring that people love platinum. I mean, why are people loving gold? They are almost platinum and gold similar. You can't destroy them. Okay. The first ounce of gold which was mined in the world is still here. It's somewhere in the world. They've never been destroyed like coal. Coal is destroyed. Similar, the first ounce of platinum which was mined is still there. Okay. So it is a valuable metal. So we need to find ways of promoting it. We have talked about it. We will engage and event experts, you know, on this matter and see how we can address that. It is very fundamental. And we have to play a role in terms of research. Research is long term, but marketing to me is not long term. You know, it's medium term in one or another. If you start to focus hard, people will start to view the platinum in a different way. And I think we've come up.
Is there a follow-up, Honourable Arima?
There has been some talk about marketing a platinum coin like a Kruger has. Has that ever come to anything?
Well, it's one of the interventions which people have identified and say, let's look at it. It's not a new thing. I mean, I think about 10 years ago, people look at it and say, can we perhaps look at the Mandela coin? Okay, we have got the gold Kruger coin. So people are actually looking at that and say, if we can come with the platinum coin, but you must also market it, that will actually increase the demand and show that we remove some of the ounces which are causing this oversupply in the platinum industry. One area which we have to look at. We were engaging a national treasurer on this matter. Even yesterday, my DDG was saying, where are we now on this matter? With national pressure, or engaging national pressure on a broad issue of saying, what can we do to look at various options? It's just that we can't go out to the public and say, we're doing this and this when, you know, we're still talking about so many issues with stakeholders. And once we have finalized this matter, we will come out, we'll come to you, honorable members, and present those issues in more detail.
I hope the honourable members will accept them, because of the issue of strategic minerals which are quite eagerly waiting to see which are going to acquire for the state in terms of legislation.
Talking about the emotional
benefit. No, anyway, one of the issues that's quite a problem, why we still apply 5, and I think we observed it especially when we were doing our oversight. What are you doing about consultating DMR? Because I think it's becoming a critical issue if the centers are able to inspect and cover issues of monitoring and evaluation when it comes to your social and labor plan. A lot of problems that I've experienced in mine that are existing now presently, I think one of the problems is because of your poor capacity in DMR. How critical is it to you and what's being done about it? You've said it several times yourself, you've indicated the implications of the budget and the difficulties, but how well are you prioritizing that?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The issue of capacity in the department, the critical area, you can divide it into three parts. It's the area of social and labor plan. The other area is the environmental area. The other area is mine and health inspection. So there are basically three key areas where we need capacity. With regards to environmental issues, we engaged national resources, and fortunately they have actually come the part now that basically said they will assist us in terms of capacity changing that area. We will be going out soon to advertise and fill positions. So funding there, they have addressed it. Okay, we are never satisfied when it comes to money, but at least they have come to the party when it comes to the issue of environment. On social and labor plan, we are engaging with them, we will engage with them on the plan. And say we really need to ensure that we address it while looking at the organogram of the department. In fact, the minister last week was saying we need to finalize this. Look at the whole organogram of the department. Say, how can we strengthen? If you look at the challenges which we are now facing on the mine, it becomes a socio-economic issue in one way or another. You have got this mine, and then attract people, and there are social issues, because the issue of social and labor plan becomes an important matter here. The whole issue of housing and living conditions of mine workers is a social economic issue. So you need staff, you need people who will be there, and even inspectors will ensure that mine actually adhere to the social and labor plan. In fact, that's reading those social and labor plans. The other day I got a whole document on social labor plan of 1 night. To go through it, it takes time. It's a document, it takes time. Then I looked at it and said, with this capacity, we'll be challenged. You know, we have a challenge. We need to ensure that we strengthen the whole area. We will engage national talent. Inspect rate. The challenge with inspect rate is that the salary of those people are engineers, as I said earlier, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers. You know, to attract them is a challenge. We are looking at it through our corporate services and see how can we address this. We are engaging public service administration on this matter and say, how can we address this? But we can't. There's no way that government will compete with the mine when it comes to paying engineers. I mean, it's not, you have to find people who are saying, I'm comfortable to work for government, I'm comfortable, I want to make a career as a civil servant. I mean, it's a choice that you need. There are those people which you can find, which will say that, you know, I want to be a civil servant, my career will be there. But to find those people, you must flood the environment with as many people as you can. If you train 100 of them and you manage to retain 10% of them, fine, it's good enough, but continue flooding the city with as many of the inspectors as possible. That's how we have unpacked the challenges when it comes to happen in the department. As I said, there are three areas, and we're working hard on them.
And that includes the organogram. We are looking at changing the organogram. Because there are very scarce in region. Very, very scarce. Okay. Slide 6, do we agree that you've covered most of the facts that are there, or do you still have something on education, Honorable Schmidt?
One issue. I take issue with the third bullet. Beneficiation is critical in addressing the triple challenge of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. It is a misleading statement. I said that there is value in a beneficiation. But overstating your case is also doing damage, because the most, in South African position, the biggest job creation is in its production capacity. It employs 500,000 people. Do you say that the beneficiation, which A, is energy intensive, of which we don't have, B, skills intensive, of which we're trying to develop, you then want to tell the committee that it is critical in addressing, it is important, it is assisting, it will help in alleviating, but saying it is critical, the critical issue. And that's why, my view, the focus is wrong. The focus is on ensuring that the production capacity of the mining department is increased. Not focusing on beneficiation. Because it is not critical. The critical issue is the mining productive capacity. The additional factor which assists is the beneficiation. You follow what I'm saying? I'm talking from a position of comparing apples to apples. You tell me the beneficiation is critical when we don't have energy, when we don't have the skills. When you go to, we went to a diamond mine about 10 years ago, Cullen. It employed, you would probably know better how many they employed, but it employed thousands of people. They took us to the beneficiation ability. I think, I'm not sure whether the other was there, Mr. Tinto was there. I think it was 20 people. Now how do you compare 20 people to, let's say, 3,000 people? You've got the priority wrong. That's my point. You follow what I'm saying?
To dovetail with the question and possibly amplify it, we have to make sure that we don't beneficiate at the cost of mining jobs, which is going to be a danger. And part of that, my colleague has just referred to, is the energy shortage. And I'd just like from you a ballpark figure, if you can give one, on the number of beneficiation smelting operations that have been involved in the Eskom buyback scheme or are currently involved in the Eskom buyback scheme, if they're lucky enough, both. How many people have been paid not to produce at the moment, not to beneficiate at the moment, and how many companies have participated in this scheme? Because I think that will give us an idea of the impact that the energy shortage is having on beneficiation.
I think they must also agree that you're already taking care of slide 7 as well, because mine was going to be on viability of energy in relation to ESCOM and what relationship you're actually having with ESCOM to ensure that the situation is improved. Anything else? Okay, DG?
The issue of the productive industry versus manufacturing industry. There are two things there. For a country like South Africa, we need to have a balance. We need to create a balance. If you go to countries like Japan, they are on the other side, the manufacturing areas, the service industry. Why it's important that South Africa should start to think and talk about beneficiation is that mineral resources have got a finite life. At some point, they will disappear. Mineral resources face a number of challenges. You can find substitution which can take place and the industry can just be wiped off. That is the issue. The other issue of marketing of platinum is so vital. Because you must never create a situation whereby platinum can be substituted, wiped off. And what will happen when this resource is depleted? You can't, it will take time to move into that space of beneficiation of manufacturing. You have to start to put that thing on the table now. I agree with you. We should not do it at the expense of our mining industry. I agree there must be this panel. But we can't put it in the back seat and say, you know what, once we have exhausted our minerals, let's bring this issue to the team. It will be too late. It will be difficult. It can be done. It can be done. Countries like Singapore have done it. Okay, in a very short space of time. What we are saying is, let's bring this letter and put it on the table. Let's take the example of Sasol. Sasol, in terms of converting coal to liquid fuel, that is beneficiation. That is beneficiation. Should we have put it in the backseat and say, let's continue mining? We will see. The coal will be gone by then. We have to import the coal to produce the oil we need. Can you see? So, as part of the broader strategy, you have to put this issue on beneficiation on the table. It's a difficult one, but that is why it must be on the table. That is why we must sit down and engage one another on this map and find a way. Because certainly, we can say we can focus on the other area of service sector, like banks and the like. But, you know, productive industry is critical. But it cannot only be confined to mining. We have to bring in the benefits. That's how we see it. There must be a balance. That one, we agree with you, but we should not do it at the cost of the mining industry. Energy issue, I think that one, everybody knows about the challenge which we face in terms of energy and what government is doing in terms of addressing this matter. Yet, it is a challenge. Yes, it is a challenge. And I was glad that ESCOM was not giving the 18% they requested. Okay? I think government in NERSA realized that it is important that the input costs are kept as low as possible. So that one is a challenge, but there are plans. We are not the competent people here to talk about the energy issue. Okay? But we interact with our colleagues in the Department of Energy. Okay? There are plans to address the energy challenges of the country. When I was at the Council for Future Science, there was a point whereby the Council for Future Science was involved with ESCOM. Even now, they are working with ESCOM to look at the nuclear power plant, you know, for the country. So there are long-term plans to address, short-term and long-term plans to address the whole issue around energy issue. The details of the smelters, I don't think we have got the exact information here. We can provide that to you in the future.
Do you have that information?
I will have to look for it. We have to talk to ESCOM, because they are the competent issue. Yes. We'll have to talk to ESCOM and then see if the information is available, and then we'll provide it to you.
But Ishi, don't you think it's critical? You know, I keep on looking at the issue of the relevance of NIC debt in such a situation, where you'd actually, instead of forming all the task teams that you're busy forming, you look at the greater part of the industry itself and the problem that it faced with. And if you look at the fact that the industry itself is outcried, because it's of no use us not looking at what their problems are, for us to be able to meet up to what our demands would be, especially in terms of labor. It's a big issue, this thing of electricity and the rise of electricity and the use in the industry itself. I should think it's a critical area to look at. And I would have thought a role player like NICDET would be, in fact, you know, when such issues come up, you should be prioritizing coordination. And in those coordination, get your relevant talks. Because through talks, you might find that another department or another person in another industry could come up with a solution that could then impact on everyone else positively to ensure that something can be done about crisis in energy. We continue to work in silos, and we insist on working in silos. And you'd think that a body like NICDET would then come up with a solution, because it involves labor, it involves industry, it involves the department. And there's no reason why you cannot involve ESCOM. You've had several engagements through your what do you call these indabas and things that you meet at, the legal class and so on that you meet at. How is it that out of what has been discussed in relation to electricity, which I'm very much aware of, you don't come to a point where there's coordination in a solution to get an answer to how best we can handle the problem and tackle it as a coordinate. Because now we're coming up with an issue of coming out with the infrastructure development from the solar that we're coming up with, but we haven't resolved the issue of the hikes in electricity prices. Where is that going to put us? In more confusion. I might be wrong. Honourable Chair?
Madam Chair, you know, the proverbial penny dropped just now because, you know, and it was raised by Ms. Lorimer, and that is, we are in favour of beneficiation. Let's look at beneficiation, what's happening. Ferrochrome. The ferrochrome industry is being, it's more and more agreement between Eskom and the mining companies to buy back the electricity. So where's production gone? Production's gone. Stop. Seriously. Where's iron ore? Where's the iron ore beneficiation gone? So look at ArcelorMittal. They're not even picking up the full complement of the agreement between ArcelorMittal and Kumba. Why not? Why not? Very good question. Because it is not economically at this point in time feasible to take iron ore and make it into steel. Such steel. Why not? Because the policies of this government is not ensuring that ArcelorMittal, what it all costs, to use 6.25 million tons. It doesn't use it. Because it can't use it. It will make a loss if it uses it. The question is why. Let's take manganese. What's the position of manganese? All the stuff we are saying, go look at the practice. Go look at the practice. Manganese, ferrochrome, iron ore. Go look at the practice. And go engage those companies. Go speak to Kumba. Go speak to Kumba and let them give you a presentation as to why productive capacity with a comparative advantage is turning to competitive advantage. Why issues such as labour, electricity, distance to market, all those issues determine whether a comparative advantage becomes a competitive advantage. A certain thing government has a control of, a certain thing government has zero control of. Let's be really honest about it today. And then you position yourself in that market to say, I am going to focus on A, B, and C, realistically engage those companies. I can't, comparative advantage automatically doesn't enter into or change into competitive advantage. The guy who said that doesn't know what we're talking about. I'm a lawyer and I can tell that. So look at why the comparative advantages in each of these three instances are not working. You go address it, then you come back to me and say beneficiation is what is quoted again. Beneficial is critical in addressing the triple challenges. But we haven't even started fixing the basics of those three commodities and why they're being beneficial, why they aren't being beneficial to the fullest extent it could be. So you want to go to a third and fourth tier beneficiation, which is basically a manufacturing function. I'm asking. Yeah. Where am I missing the point?
You know, we're getting older, Oliver Schmidt. Let's not get too emotional. I don't want to say other takes here. Any other take on that before that? Oh, another one, yes. I stress my hand.
With the energy shortage, what is the department looking at for renewable energy sources? The feasibility and sustainability of it? And how much emphasis are we actually looking at that? Is there any proposals in the MPRDA for that, to use a certain percentage? Mining companies must start using a certain percentage of renewable energy. Is there anything of the sort, or what plans are there? Thank you.
Honourable one, I'm just asking, are you part of the Energy Committee as well? Oh, that's the question. Okay. Okay, Hiji, can you respond to that so that we move on?
Thank you. I can see the issue of beneficiation is the issue is very close to people's hearts. And I'm sure when we engage you on the implementation plan, it will be a real serious engagement on this matter. And I'm looking forward to that. What is important when you and back to beneficiaries, you need to ensure that you look at the market. Okay? And that should be part of the process. You can't embark on beneficiaries if you don't have the market. We agree. Okay? The issue of comparative advantages versus competitive advantage. Okay? I'm the one who says comparative advantage. It's very important. It's critical. if comparative advantage was not important, wouldn't have been having country all over the country, going all over Africa looking for minerals? Wouldn't have been these countries going all over trying to buy minerals in our nation of countries? You all know them. They're in Zimbabwe, they're in South Africa, they're all over Africa trying to want to secure minerals because they don't have this comparative advantage. So you can, if you take the back, they've got the so-called competitive advantage. They are looking for rare earth metals all over Africa. Why? They need that comparative advantage. You need those two things. You can't separate them. You can't separate them. That is why some countries, you can't even do exploration. They can't even license for 10 minerals. Because why? They know the importance of comparative advantage. So, Honorable Smith, I think we need another engagement on this matter. You need to have both on the table for you to have a sustainable success. If you have only one, and you can't access the mineral resources, you'll be in serious trouble. And the other important thing, Honorable Smith, the mineral industry is a cyclical environment. It's not static. Okay? Demand and supply, it will do this. You will start a business and such of steel manufacturing. This does not mean that the price of steel will drop, because economy plays a role. It plays a game here. It comes in here. So the whole issue of markets are not safe. But you can't say because you'll experience a downturn in the economy, you would not want to start your beneficiation industry. I don't think so. It's business. Okay? If currently there's a problem in terms of demand, this does not mean 10 years down the line there will be a problem when it comes to demand. Those are the markets. Okay? I'll give an example. If you want to start a granite mine, if you don't have market, you are doomed. If you want to polish those granite, if you are not linked to architects in Europe, you are almost doomed, because they determine which type of granite should be marketed in certain area of Europe. So you need a strategy where you say, I will start a granite mine, I'll beneficiate my granite and produce a type of slab. But you need to have linkages with the architect. That is how it is in Europe, to ensure that you can enter that environment. But you need a full strategy. You can't say, I'll put a plant, I'll get market come 15 years or 3 years down the line. Not at all. You must have the whole plan, the business plan. That is what is very, very important. You have to have partnerships. If you are going into the steel industry, you might even have partnerships with the people who manufacture cars, and say, how can I partner with them? People who are in infrastructure development, and say, look, I'm starting this steel industry in South Africa, but let's look at partnership with various players downstream in that environment. That's how it must be done, not in isolation. I agree, the issue of LB, it's an important one, the challenge I've mentioned earlier on. But unfortunately, there is a department which deals with energy issues, especially issues of renewables. It's not our area of competency. There is a department, but we interact with them, and we will interact with them when these issues are raised. This infrastructure has team we talked about, they'll be looking at all the issues of infrastructure. And then we will invite the Department of Energy to participate, including ESCOM, to be part of this process as we work on this issue. Even Transnet will have to be brought on board through in the infrastructure task team. Thank you.
And just a
wonderful letter.
I'm very encouraged, DG, by your assurance that you're looking at markets. Just one item on the whole debate between comparative and competitive advantage. The thing that always strikes me is that the Bayside and Hillside aluminium smelters are there purely because of competitive advantage. We don't produce the raw aluminium bauxite that gets melted at those things. The only reason that those things are in South Africa is because of the competitive advantage supplied by cheap electricity. I think it's quite an interesting point to consider, that debate between comparison and competitive advantage. You may or may not want to comment.
Okay. With regards to aluminium, because of when we have to import the bauxite from Australia, and that electricity played a major role for that plant. There's no problem there, but there must also be linkages with the market, okay? And also linkages with the bauxite. If Australia decides tomorrow morning that we are not going to give South Africa bauxite, we're finished. We'll have to find our own bauxite in South Africa. No, yeah, but you have to look for bauxite in South Africa, which mainly with there are areas whereby the bauxite is. You just have to look at technology. But if Australia can come to the law tomorrow morning and say, from such and such a day, we are not going to export our bauxite, we will close this plant, then the issue of comparative comes into play now. Thank you.
Okay.
Just one short comment. But
let's close it after this. Honorable Schmidt will be you, and then we close it after Honorable Front.
They are not interlinked. They are not dependent upon each other, I think is the point. They can stand alone, or comparative advantage can be used to give you a kickstart in competitive advantage. And I think that's the point that Lauren is making. So it depends on the country and the enabling environment. We're in favor of beneficiation, where it's a business act, where the comparative advantage can become a competitive advantage, and you need to look at those factors, because the factors determine whether the comparative advantage becomes competitive advantage. Labor, stability of market, all those energy costs, there's a myriad of them. So they're not automatically comparative advantage. And my issue is basically, we should go and look at those three examples I've given you. Why our comparative advantage, which was used and beneficiation is taking place, and the production capacity is even higher, can be higher, production capacity exists, but it's not used. That's my point. Why is it not used? Why is ArcelorMittal, when the construction facility does exist, the ability to convert to, why is it not being used? I know you're sure about markets, but it can't be only, well, steel. Manganese. Ferrochrome is not being shipped to China. The demand didn't dwindle. The competitive advantage in China improved. And that's why all our ferrochrome, I think it is going to China. Because the competitive advantage is by far better than ours because of whatever the facts may be. That's why I said we should go and look what the concerns are, why our ferrochrome industry, smelting industry, has reduced, why our metal is not producing as it should be. Why our manganese market smelting, all those issues, that is my problem. And you talk about the fourth tier possible further beneficiation.
We have to touch some more.
Mr. Chairperson, I think we need a session on beneficiation alone.
I agree.
This piecemeal kind of a hit and run attack is not assisting. Well, legal arguments would defeat scientific argument that the chicken comes before an egg. They would want to argue that the egg comes before the chicken. And that is what is happening here now. So I propose, Professor, that at one stadium, that's a legal term, or butter stadium, we need a full session on this. Beneficiation is important. I like it when you say, Didi, if you are mining gold, it doesn't mean that you can beneficiate gold. You can mine gold, other people can beneficiate there. And let's take this from there. This comparative and competitive advantages, you know, so that all of us understand each other when we're embarking on this. I think let us pass from this now, Chairperson. But at a certain point we need to have a session. Thank you.
I think that has been noted. Can we agree that we will take a break for 10 minutes and then when you come back, continue? One of the issues that I'm starting to agree with out of discussion by some of the members is that whenever presentations are made, we are noticing that they are very vague on time frames. As a result, we lose track of each other, and we ourselves as members forget to go back on some critical issues. I think we once discussed the issue of beneficiation, where you even developed a strategy, if I'm not mistaken, and presented a strategy. And out of the strategy, unfortunately, because we don't have the notes, there's a lot of issues we didn't get to discuss. So I think we must agree in this meeting now that we will definitely have a session where we focus only on beneficiation, or more so on this review process of the MPRCA. Because I think it's critical that we as the committee are actually on board for one with the processes of the changes and the review of the MPRCA. Secondly, it does give an impression to us that we are not doing enough, even to the public for that matter. It's almost as if our oversight has just become an issue of routine and we need to be more specific and more on emphasis or participatory, if I might even say so, on relevant changes that need to take place when it comes to the issues of the MPRCA. So I'm going to request that we seriously look at a date where DMR can come back to us early next term, and perhaps as one of the first part of our program, we iron out the issues that we want to take care of, because the beneficiation thing now almost looks like it's going to take us into 4 o'clock, and we are not yet happy with the bite that we've had. Is that okay, DG? We'll have that under discussion with the chairperson, and then as early as possible, prepare something for us, and we can engage solely on the issue of beneficiation with the committee. Or rather, should I say, on the APRDA, in consideration of the fact that you're going to go under review a little well, and you're already presenting the second time to cabinet.
The issue of beneficiation, you know, are willing to engage the honourable member on it. The MPRDA, I think, if you would agree, maybe we should allow that process of going to cabinet to be concluded, if that's fine. Because now what we are doing now, we are now engaging with other people to clean up that document, and then take it to cabinet, and then once it's done, it will come to parliament, this committee, that to be your deal actually, then we can engage.
Engage. So can keep the verification issue that you feel ready that we can meet as soon as possible. Agreed, members?
Agreed.
Thank you. Can we then go to any takes on infrastructure, competitiveness and infrastructure on page, on slide 8? Honourable Wang, Honourable Lorimer, Honourable Schmidt. Is it towards the end? It's Honourable Wang. Honourable Wang, then Honourable Lorimer, then Honourable Kont. I can see challenges in the one that we can.
Just for Mintek, have there had any development over the past few years in the research and development? Had any been breakthroughs? Are they Are they focusing on any specific innovative things or areas that they might be focused on? Cell phones or aeroplanes or something innovative? Or are there any breakthroughs that are nearly coming through? And what have they actually, in the past years, what have they actually come up with for the research and development? Thank you.
So my question is essentially the same. Is there any way that we get some kind of report on what they're doing and exactly who's involved? I think that would be very, very interesting for the committee.
I'll let it open.
Sebastian, I think it goes the same line. MINTEC is there to develop efficient mineral technologies. What delivery have they effected as a company? And they've got this sensor-based sorting. And I am made to believe that they want to migrate that technology to the mining sector. Of which use is that technology going to be, and how far are they in the process of migrating it to the mining sector? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. MINTEC has been involved in, mineral processing for many, many, many years. And they have really, addressed a lot of challenges to the mining industry efficiency. Look at the biotechnology issue. They were in the forefront on the issue they are still. Look at UG2. Okay? Very important mineral resource in South Africa. By the way, they managed to come with the technology of mining UG2 that's got the chrome, okay? And actually extract also platinum from it. That was if they were not involved in it, we wouldn't have been able to come with it. We wouldn't have been able to mine the UG2. They also got a project on gold. Usage of gold. They've been working quite a number of years on this one, of trying to increase the basket of usage of gold on this issue. And I think what we could do is I will ask them, as requested, to put a package to the committee on some of their key projects which they are involved in, and then they can present them to you. They will be coming to the committee also very soon to present on their strategic plan, and I think the committee can engage them on that matter. The one of putting, I'll also ask them to explain it in more detail in a report, which we will provide to the committee. They are a critical component of the mining industry. That is why through this process of needed, whatever you said. They have been working there, yes, they know, they report to the new center in terms of corporate governance, and then let them come to the phone and lead this issue of innovation and R&D and coordination. So they will be bringing in institutions like CSR, institutions like Council for Children, put together and look at the whole industry and say, where are we in terms of innovation in South Africa, and where do you want to go in terms of innovation and R&D in the mineral field? They look at the whole value chain. This is how we can play a role in terms of addressing the strategic issue associated with R&D in the mining industry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Teacher, generally, there's a decline in exploration in South Africa. What would the department attribute that to? Would it assist society if the department was to champion for an establishment of a state exploration mining company. How would it be, DG? I know my right, they used to be my left. Now they are my right. I don't know why. they are going to come up on that one. But really, there's a need for the country to explore more. Because we are very thin on that area of exploration. Is it because he's exploring, the companies that are doing exploration work are private companies, and they come when they like, they come when they are going to get something. And in my view, if that is the case, wouldn't a state exploration company be an answer to that?
I think another machete is burning.
I thought, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, can I just... I'll take it from the other side. I think that... I would still like to hear the argument why a state-owned mining entity was preferred on Mr. Santu would facilitate exploration. I know that the chairperson or the CEO of Mintec, I can't get his name now, I can see his face there. When he was a young geologist, he developed or caused a certain mineral to be discovered, and that created a certain, at a state geologist, if I understand correctly what his position was. Now that we're in the state of the nation address, how do you, as a department, see the state-owned mine entity facilitating, not being recipient of a free carried interest in exploration in gas and petroleum, gas and oil? It's one thing being a recipient, it's another thing being a facilitator and ensuring an enabling environment. I think that's basically the question. So how do you see that this state-owned mining entity being a facilitator in ensuring 1% exploration? I think the R&D is at 1%, I think, of GDP. Yes, it should be, if I understand correctly, at least 2% or 4% or something. I haven't seen the figure. 2%. Why is it that when we are a mining country with the biggest assets in terms of mineral resources, we have one of the lowest R&D budget in terms of GDP?
Honorable Lorimer, the heat is going high.
No, mine's very easy. We're told that the state mining company is going to be shifted to fall under the DMR. When is it going to happen?
Thank you, honorable member. I will address the issue of honorable 21st of declining exploration in South Africa. To attract in exploration in the mining sector, there are basically two important elements which have got to be there. The first one is an attractive geological environment, which is linked with high quality geological infrastructure, knowledge infrastructure, that is geological media. So that package must be there. The second one, you need to have an enabling legislation. Those are the two. If you can get these two things right, you will see that will happen. And when it comes to the exploration part in South Africa, okay, we have noticed that our first element needs to be addressed. That is why National Treasury has come to the party. They have given Council for Design additional money to focus on this issue. because you notice that it is an important element in the national treasury. That okay, to address this, let's vote judgment. Okay. Comes to the issue of legislation, it's a broad issue touching on competitiveness of the industry in terms of taxes and everything. And I think, you know, we are there amongst the top countries when it comes to competitiveness, when it comes to legislation. In taxes, our taxes are among the top in the world when it comes to that. We can compete with other countries there. So we have unpacked the situation and we are quite certain that this matter can be addressed. But also, it brings in the issue of the state-owned mining company. Sometimes, you might look at certain areas and say, let me intervene. Because some people are reluctant to invest exploration money in certain areas. Because we are in a global world now. It's a global environment. People go and invest where they can get returns quicker. So sometimes you find that due to geological terrain of the country, some people are not interested in investing in certain areas. Then you bring in your state-owned mining company there and say, come and do exploration for us in this area, because there is high risk sometimes. They can move in and look at this area and work there. But the role of the state-owned mining company should look in the context of the country. You see, where can we use them best? As the best area to use them, okay, is in terms of ensuring that the security of supply for the country. Okay? For instance, in the whole sector, it is important that we always have security of supply in terms of coal. So they will play a major role when it comes to that environment. Okay? They can mine and give the coal to Eskom. It's important. Then they can even look at other areas and have their own reserves. These reserves are South Africa for the people of South Africa. They will play a major role when it comes to that area. So two areas where I find that there's little appetite for certain exploration area. So we have to play a major role there and do exploration. It has happened in the past in this country. We talked about bauxite. Okay? There was a study which was undertaken where people went out and said, let's find bauxite. And the state went and found bauxite. We talked about that bauxite. That's why we know that there is bauxite in South Africa. All what you need to do, maybe the costs are very high to extract that bauxite. But it was done intentionally to ensure the issue of security of supply. And the state-owned mining company will have to be used in such cases. We are not going to give preference to them. If you look at the Act, per se, it's not talking about free carry for state-owned mining company, not at all. They will move into the area, they will work, and they identify mineral resources, and then that's how it's going to be.
My worry, every time DMR comes, there's always some form of a task, and there's so many of them. Can you at least confirm me to say that they're part of MIGDET? Can you confirm that for me? Because I'm so worried about there's so many task teams. I mean, never really get to get any reporting on these task teams or understanding as to who's who, where, and what is happening. And if they are being concluded as a task team in terms of their work. It's just this task team. Are they by any chance connected to MIGDET? Because, no, MIGDET. If I'm wrong, just correct me. I'm just saying that every time you come with a presentation, any presentation, there's always one or the other task team. I'm also just looking on page 8 now. There's now this infrastructure task team that you are talking about by the Council for Geosciences. This is what I'm worried about, is that we continue to work in silos. And we continue to refuse, if I may say so, to come to a point of coordination in the work that we do. I think that's part of why we're not getting solutions. I just want to get the authority that all the task teams that keep on eating out of this have something to do with MIGDET, because I'm yet to understand how functional MIGDET is.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. certainly these two task teams, this innovation one and R&D and information, they are part of MITEC. They are definitely part of MITEC. They report to MITEC.
These task teams. Honorable Schmidt?
One individual, except if they come in the individual capacity, about what media is doing. I don't know what media is doing, and I can say to you 80% of possibility that no one in this committee knows what media is doing. Now you're telling me everything's happening in media. That's fine. What media is doing, we don't know. You tell me all these issues are referred to MITEC, fine. Is that kind of level of oversight you expect of this committee? You say, listen, don't worry, the matter is with MITEC. We don't receive any reports from MITEC. None, zero. I think that's what Madam Chair is saying. We ask about electricity, we've been open and frank. Electricity. If I understand correctly, 40% of any operating company average electricity cost. 40%. You there's probably a more 39.678%, but roughly speaking 40%. It could be less. Or maybe it's 40%, I think electricity is less, 20 or 25, less than 10. There is a labor, there is environmental issues, which seemingly is going to come back to departmental resources. But if 10% of a mining company operational cost is electricity, how come that the department says, I need to go to another department to find out what position is concerning electricity, green fuel or green field in terms of renewable energy? Because the mining industry out there is, I think one of the mining companies, Extrata, I think it's called Extrata Energy Company, if I recall correctly, I might be correct, which they are actively engaging in the energy sector to try and see how they can be a certain being, to a certain extent, self-reliant, whether it is methane gas or whether it is whatever. How is it that the department has to go and compare to another company, another department, to be able to have an overall view as to what's happening in the mining industry with all these factors should be under the at least under the knowledge ability of the department? How does the department take sole responsibility or major responsibility for the mining industry when it has to refer to electricity to that department, when it has to refer to, at this point in time, environmental liabilities to that department, when it has to refer to another company for, let's say, housing, it's a very good example. The mining company sits in the middle and it says, I'm a mining industry, but I've got to refer to only regulatory issues to the mining department. We've got to refer to the environmental department, we've got to refer to the housing department. I'm asking you, that's the kind of issue. Where's the cooperation? Is it at MITEC? If so, it's at MITEC. Then we have some report back as to what's happening in MITEC, because we don't see the result of anything except but what happens in the department when you come to report.
Do you want
Honorable
Abraham to add? No. Do you want to respond to the DG or can you continue?
I can respond to the Honorable Chairperson. You know, MITEC is a tripartite forum where we engage, you know, stakeholders in issues related to the mining industry. But the department has got its own program, which are in the annual performance plan, which honorable members here, you know, look at them. We report back in the annual report. Those are our programs. But after we implement those programs, we touch base with our stakeholders, which is extremely, extremely important. Now, for instance, we are amending the MPRDA. Okay? I think it won't be wise of the department. It's a program of the department. It won't be wise for the department to go and amend the MPRDA alone and just push it through. That's why we go to this consultative forum of MITEC. They don't run the department. It's a consultative forum where we engage one another. That is how it is. Okay. But sometimes as we engage one another, we realize that there are certain issues which we have to work on. Then we'll then create task teams and say, look, let's have a task team which will work on this issue. But everything is linked to the program of the department. Regulatory issues, yes, there are challenges. in terms of regulatory issues. But they are not confined to South Africa. You can go to Canada, you can go anywhere. You know, they've got challenges of regulatory issues whereby areas, you know, government agencies are involved. Okay? Even in Botswana, anywhere, it's like this. But government has realized the importance of ensuring that let's streamline this process. And one of the processes is so vital. It's the minister is leading that process together with the Minister of Environment Affairs, whereby they said, look, let's streamline the issues relating to environment. There is a process which is underway now. It is also linked to the MPRD, whereby we want to create a situation where when we issue out or when we grant a right, at the same time we'll then be granting a water license and environmental authorization. So we're streamlining the process. It is also linked to the MPRD. We are working hard on the street. It's a common issue. It's about any country. They are experiencing the same thing when they are environmental agencies of government, they are water agencies of government. The challenge is for each country to look at its environment and address it. And I think government is doing that very well, especially to identify the environment as a very important part of streamlining this process. Yes, Department of Labor will be there in terms of the labor business, you know, but the critical one in the mineral industry, if you want to improve efficiency, is to streamline issues of the environment, and that is what we're focusing on now. Thank you.
Okay, having exhausted page 8. The two issues. Honorable Sonto and Honorable Lorimer.
But we still are no closer to finding out what's being discussed in MIGDET, and I think it would be useful for this committee to know that. Even if we were to be provided simply with minutes of their meetings that we'd know what they're talking about, it would be very useful for this committee to know what are the issues concerning the mining sector as put forward by people in the mining sector, not just the department. So is there some way that we can get some kind of a report back on what's going on in MIGDET?
Chairperson, water. Water, as you have been trying to embark on these projects and programs, water is going to be key in mining. And water in South Africa is becoming a scarce resource. Where are you going to get water?
I think like the beneficiation issue, we might have looked at finding a way of having, especially where we also committed. Up and beyond that, I don't think we can expect them to take responsibility for that, but it's noted that we do need that to come to us and perhaps make a presentation just to get better understanding of how they operate, what is happening, how far are they, whatever they are doing, and how are they contributory to the mining sector. Okay, Honorable Tiji.
Thank you, Honorable. I think perhaps we could put together an overview of all the issues which are involved in MIGDET. Outline showing you the task teams. I think maybe that is what Honorable members here got the problem is. And that could be helped address it, if that is fine. But basically, the department, in fact, we lead it. It's the principals of MIGDET, the chair of the principal is the minister.
Okay.
So what we could do, we could put together a document showing you how MIGDET is, the structure of MIGDET, you know, and that will actually help if you agree. Is it fine? And then the activities, what they've been involved in. That
fine. That's fine. I think that would be acceptable. And then, at least with that information, then we determine what we need to do next. Yes. Thank you.
And also, the issue of water is highly in South Africa. You can't have a mine without water. So, we in this regard, I think it's critical. We need to ensure that we work very closely with the Department of Water Affairs. And if there is a mine which has got to be opened, there is a shortage of water. It's part of infrastructure in fact when you look at it. And it has always been a problem. When you look at what has happened, how the platinum was exploited in South Africa, people could not move into the Eastern Limb precisely because there were water challenges for many, many years. Then once those challenges were sort of alleviated, you could see people are now starting to move in. So it is part of infrastructure, and it has to be looked at in more detail.
Thank you. Can we go to slide 9? Slide 10. I think generally the problem there was this issue of people being paid within 30 days. At some stage, I think especially from geosciences and MINTEC, we had a situation where they might not be able to pay within the 30 days because of the nature of the work that has to be executed. There's not the payment being done. But if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Mgomezulu did mention that the last time, have a solution to the problem. But in as far as DMA is concerned, you are now at 100%, I take it. And it's not an issue anymore. At 92%, sorry. It's at 92%, so it's just really looking at, but is it really happening? Because, no, I'm asking this to say, because, you know, we have to be frank at times. When it comes to the small-scale mining industries, one of the problems they normally have is payment, issues of procurement. So I'm just wondering if you have some sense of monitoring when it comes to, especially these small mines, because there's a lot of complaints in relation to that, which makes me wonder if you take the total number of mines we have in the industry as to whether they have been recognized that they are part of the problem. Procurement is really still a problem. And then the other issue also is that in as much as those services are being paid, we don't know how the reporting mechanisms or systems there will come out to prove that the payments are really being done, especially in the private industry. That's where the problem still lies. It might be relevant to the 92%, might be relevant to you as a department. But when it comes to your what do you call it, your supervisory issues, your monitoring and evaluation issues, or it doesn't form part of your basis of assessment when it comes to the charts and issues of procurement?
We did not put it in the chart in terms of assessing this, but it's an interesting angle that you are presenting here, saying, you know, should this just be confined to government? I've heard, I don't know if this is true, that some big companies basically it takes 3 months and more to pay.
Okay.
That's how they actually eventually make, I mean not eventually, that's how eventually find a small business collapse. So it's a very interesting angle. This landscape is just in respect of
the department.
But what you are saying is, what about the mining industry? If they do if they can do it, I think it will actually help a lot. We need to really engage on it and see how we can look at this honorable check.
Yeah, I think it's a necessity because it's part of what is being blamed for people not making it in the industry. And if they get away with that, it also then says in terms of your scorecard, there's a gray area there. Perhaps you need to extend to being inclusive of actually ensuring that people are paid. I mean, they're citizens of the country, they're trying to make it business, and it's quite a difficulty when they cry and they don't know who to cry to. It's really a problem. Some companies close. They practically close down in big numbers.
I just want to ask, see the framework on business stability that was on the 25th, is it on the network, on the website? Is it on the website? I'll go have a look.
It's on the website. I think it's a statement I also read in Parliament sometime last week. I took it from the... Yes.
And secondly, on the issue of the mining charter, there's the new codes of practice which is in draft stage by DTI. And apparently it's going to lead to more confusion because there might be at odds with mining charters. How do you foresee that process going forward in terms of merging it? What's going to take preference? I suppose mining charters would take preference until amended. But any notion of thinking in terms of that?
Honorable Khulula.
Thank you very much. We are on slide 10, where we are talking about the payment of these small-scale miners. I think it is the duty of the department actually to ensure that these small-scale miners are paid timely. And yesterday I was listening to another presentation from the other committee that I have on public enterprise, where they come up with a very good strategy of naming and shaming those people who are not paying on time, those small scale miners. Mm-hmm. So that I would propose also to you to follow suit, to name and shame those people who are not paying small scale miners or any other people in this industry. Thank you very much.
Okay, can we go to, I think that was just an input, yes? Can you go to slide 11 on health? What I'd like to know there, in terms of mine health and safety, the inspectorate itself, do you particularly have occupational health practitioners? And who do they fall under? Anybody else on slide 11? Honorable Sonto?
Looking at Chairperson, that's the continuing concern of my employees' health. One would want to understand how catastrophic is that when you say it's a continuing concern. Is it controllable? All right, thanks.
GMR?
Okay, thank you. Starting with the first question on the health technicians, we have two types of health inspectors within the department falling under the inspectorate. One, we have occupational hygienists. They look at the environment itself underground or at the working place. For instance, they look at the threshold of noise, dust, gas, and so forth, and the control measures that have been put to deal with those, so that the employees can undergo exposure. And there are the exposure limits indicated in the law that the mine has to comply with. So those occupational hygiene inspectors, they definitely look in compliance in there. When we also have what we call occupational medicine inspectors. Occupational medicine inspectors will go to medical centers or the mine clinics to make sure that in terms of the law, the mines, they monitor the medical surveillance of the mine. In other words, to make sure that all the employees are fit to work at the mine, and also to check whether there's any operational disease that they might have participated with to deal with. So we do have those health inspectors. And secondly, I think the issues of health are more legacy issues that we are dealing with now. If you look at the, it's a concern to us, unfortunately, because of the legacy issues. It takes 10 to 15 years to acquire the process, and it takes 20 years to acquire asbestosis. In fact, we are still having cases of asbestos imported now, and we don't have any asbestos mines in the country. So it is a challenge that particularly, but so what we are trying to do through working with the stakeholders to ensure that, you know, there's a significant improvement on there. There's also challenges in terms of non-communicable diseases. Mm. Although they're not occupational, but, you know, if you're having a person with epilepsy, working underground and driving a machine, for instance, even not driving a machine, I mean, if let's say he collapses and no one sees him and helps him, then it becomes a challenge. He can be run over by equipment, or he might unfortunately pass away. So that's why it's very important that our special medicine inspectors, they check that each and every employee is checked that they are fit to work. Uncommunicable diseases also include lifestyle diseases as well, you know, hypertension and so forth. We have a substantial number of cases that have been reported where tests have collapsed underground, but it's not related to the occupation itself or the hazard that they're exposed to. So we are also looking at that. We are doing research on that through the council. But yes, I think in terms of, you know, highlighting that it's a concern to us is the pure numbers that are still being reported in terms of the legacy. And that's why we are saying it is a great concern to us. In fact, the number of people who die because of health issues, they're four times those who die because of safety or accident. And that's why we try to ensure there's a balance when we look at the two. So thank you.
You know, I know that, I don't know if I should put it under wellness or up and beyond, because there is something we are talking about, protected clothing for women. But there's a tendency of getting to see and understand that there are cases that are not being reported of women deaths, especially underground. Let's find a way of putting that on paper so that we are aware of it. And as much as the women are a small group, but they are a significant group of the mining industry now. We are mostly worried about, I think I've mentioned it in the past as well, I'm mostly worried about this because in one of the visits that we had, we got to discover that there's hidden cases or unreported cases of women abuse underground that lead even to death. So I think that should be sort of pulled out, because if it's not left controlled, it could mushroom into something that could actually give the impression that we are not really looking after women or taking care of them being mine workers as well, mine laborers as well. And also perhaps focus on the issue of them also improving in terms of human resource development issues to get better positions and get a sense of where we are now. We'd normally mention it, but we're not really getting a sense if we're getting there or not. I just thought I should mention that. Can you go on to slide 12? Okay.
If I may share, I think on the last issue about the order is on the progression of women. I think it's one of the things that we are looking through the MQA, the Mining Qualification Authority. I think we make sure that the programs they take into consideration the requirements of the mining charter. Because the charter is clear as well that, you know, there must be, you know, women's development as well, either managerial and so forth. So the MQA as well, we are striving to ensure that it definitely covers it. But we've actually picked the point in terms of the other issues. That
Honourable Hua?
Just to carry on the woman issue, is there a permission of the mining companies to have, for example, sexual harassment education tapes? Or I know whenever we go to the mines, we've got a safety tape that we go, we look through and so on. What about for the workers? For them to actually, with education, I think that will help a lot. To say, okay, well, what is sexual harassment? Maybe some of the men don't really realize. Obviously, they are the most cases, I'm assuming, they do realize. But what are the implications? What can the woman, who can the woman report to? What are the structures they can report to and what processes? So they get educated. The men also get educated of the punishment or what actually happened to them. Thank you.
I think that's a good point. There are big minds that try to do that, but we'll try to ensure, you know, as your suggestion, it's a good point that you are raising that it's throughout the mining sector that it does that. Thank you for this.
Slide 12, can I go to slide 13? Any takes there? Another question?
Can I just ask, it seems to me that a lot of your inspectors are moved or pushed, whatever you call it, to the mining sector, private mining sector. Shouldn't one then try and do the other way around and say, listen, provide us with individuals within your own company who are interested in becoming inspectors. Send them to a training under the MQA, for instance. I don't know where they exactly are trained, but MQA. And you then carry the shared cost. Because if that individual then gets back, they then train their own inspectors from their own members who they think are qualified under your guidance and with your input. So in other words, you are being proactive in ensuring that their members who they want to train and who they think should be fit and proper in their environment coming to your training. In other words, just do the other way around. I don't know whether there's feasibility for it.
I suppose that will be an issue to also make use of performance appraisal. How effective are you using performance appraisal at that level? Honorable Kinshaw?
Suppose all the intake of the learner instructor's program, do you centralize it? Is it only in Victoria? The regions are not taken care of.
Can respond?
Okay. I think to respond to Honorable Shimizu's question, we have also looked at that, but one of the issues with that was it was the issue of continuity and conflict memory as well. One of the challenges as well that we are facing as inspectors is to ensure that we have enough people that will mentor new people coming through. One of the things that we are also looking at was to ensure that we employ people who have retired at the mine, who have experience. You know, they employed some of them either at the head office or at the region to really help us to impart that mining knowledge. But what is also important that very important that you must have people within the inspectorate, because there's a difference between mining and the inspectorate knowledge based on the activities that we also do. So it's very important that within the inspectorate as well, we have mentors for those people coming from it, from the mine with experience, to make sure that we impart some knowledge to them so that they'll help us. So we are looking at that. We will also further consider what you are suggesting to see how do we make sure that, you know, we deal with the issues of corporate memory and, you know, issues of continuity with the students. In terms of the intake of learner inspectors, what we do is, for instance, two years ago, we came up with an HRD program of learner inspectors. We had 24 of those learners who were graduates, and we put them at courses for 2 years to acquire that knowledge. What we've done is that we place them at the regional office, because that's where most of our work takes place. So we place generally all our learner inspectors at our regional office, not at our head office, so that they can acquire the necessary knowledge to be put in place.
The ABET training, it's failing. I think that you need to acknowledge. And there's a lot of money being spent there. Could you perhaps consider changing the curriculum? I think it's the curriculum that needs to, rather than putting the guy behind the desk who becomes so bored, rather customize it to the type of work that they do, and even possibly to possible progression. Because that process is so slow, it's so boring, with very little progress out of an individual. By the time the person even ends ABET, probably they're already in pension. I think we need to start reconsidering, and even being an issue of concern that can take to higher education, to have a real look into the ABET training, and with your input perhaps, MR, to M2A, it could be a more effective thing to have it rather work directed. We had a problem also in some of the mines that we visited in the Eastern Cape, I think the one Lafarge, where they actually practically don't have ABET anymore because of dropouts. They have a high rate of dropouts, and that's why we indicated to them that at times it's not our own doing, but I mean, I myself, if you're going to teach me ABCD until I go on pension, what's the point? And in the meantime, the state is giving in a lot of money for ABET training. Perhaps we should start looking at ABET differently. And it should be an outcry to practically all areas of work.
One of the concerns that we had through the NQA, that there's a high dropout rate, because of the, that's one of the issues with the syllabi that is being used, and
the time
that is being, you know, given to make sure that they they go through it. So we've been trying to see, obviously compare what other teachers are doing in this particular regard through the MQA, and how can we improve our, you know, our own program on ABET. But something that we, in fact, our minister also was concerned about, he actually raised a concern on this matter, something that we also look at, okay, how do we deal with the carbon issue.
Yeah, because I don't want to be the one to bring out figures of how much is spent on ABET to the teachers in comparison to what the results are. It's terrifying. Slide 14, international relations. And I think we did justice to the document. Do we agree? Can we then pass it for adoption? Honourable Schmidt, you can't say no.
I'm not sure what you want to adopt, man. I have a problem with it.
I want to adopt what GMR represented to us. With no doubt, with no doubt, absolutely no doubt.
Okay, we can't change the document. We can adopt the document only.
Yes. Any seconder? You're so exhausted and well exercised, I think nobody's forecasting. Honorable, what am I seconding?
We don't disagree with what was said.
Yeah, but then you drop such a document and then we know it's done. Thank you very much, GMR. I think this was a good exercise in a way, and we learned a lot out of it. I just wish the implementation can go on a high on what is given here. And more than the implementation, the time frame, and the minute there's challenges or hiccups, we wish there could be a way of communicating so that you are able to understand what issues are and not unnecessarily go into conflict. But more so, I think, with the state of affairs in the mining industry right now, such a presentation would be very effective if you could even take it to them. Have a way of presenting it to them and engaging about it with them. Because sometimes their understanding, I think, differs from the rest of us, as politicians, as communities, and as a result, we don't come to a point where we get work coordinated and moving on. We seem to be at a stand. So thank you very much for that. And amidst the recommendations that we've given, which have been noted, I'd like to declare the meeting closed. Thank you.